And welcome back to the second half of the show. Hope you enjoyed a restful break.
I did.
And you okay there?
Now we're going to talk about women who act very differently from the woman that we mentioned in the previous movie, as Claude gives us the plot description for Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown.
See, well, before I start, I do have to note that the English version of the title is kind of a crummy translation. The Spanish title is Mujeres al Borde de un Ataque de Nervios, which more appropriately translates to Women on the Border of an Attack of the Nerves. An attack of the nerves is a kind of, it's kind of a cultural thing involving like overdramatic displays of emotion, especially when you hear disturbing news or you're part of a disturbing event. So psychologically, it would be closer to like a panic attack or PTSD than a nervous breakdown. And I think that's important for the story as a whole. Anyway, we have television actress Pepa Marco. She is depressed because her boyfriend Ivan has very recently broken up with her. Now, Pepa and Ivan aren't just TV actors. They're also voice actors who dub foreign films. Specifically, we see Ivan working on Johnny Guitar. That's the 1954 movie starring Joan Crawford and Sterling Hayden and actually a pretty good cast. You should go see it. Anyway, Ivan is dubbing Hayden's part, but Pepa isn't there to do Crawford because she took too many sleeping pills and she overslept. At the end of the recording session, Ivan manages to get through to Pepa on the phone and he asks her to pack his things in a suitcase that he'll pick up later because he's going away somewhere. We see Pepa arrive to dub another film, but it's an emotionally intense scene that she's working on, and she cries throughout, eventually fainting. She calls someone looking for Ivan, and it turns out to be the home of Lucia, a former lover of Ivan and the mother of his son Carlos. Lucia is furious that Pepa is even called and hangs up on her. Carlos says he needs to talk to Lucia, but she is not in the mood to talk to him. Pepa meets with a real estate agent to sublet her penthouse apartment. Next, she goes to meet Isabel, a friend who works in a pharmacy. She asks Isabel for more sleeping pills, suggesting I can bring the prescription in later on, and Isabel does agree to give her the pills. Pepa returns home and checks her answering machine, and there's a message from Ivan who says he is desperate to talk to her. He keeps speaking in these clauses, which allows her to respond to the recording in real time. It's a little bit funny there. But basically, it's clear she doesn't believe a word he says. She makes herself some gazpacho, and she uses some of it to wash down a sleeping pill. Another call comes in, and it's the realtor who says he has someone to look at the place the next morning. Pepa dumps the remaining sleeping pills into the blender of gazpacho, but then she puts the whole thing into the refrigerator. She goes into the bedroom and she starts to light a cigarette, but thinks better of it, so she tosses the match away, where it lands on several other matches that have spilled on out of the box, and they ignite. And the next thing Pepa knows, her bed is on fire, and she has to get the garden hose to go put it out. She angrily packs up Ivan's stuff and a few other things, declaring herself to be done with him altogether. Shortly thereafter, she goes to Ivan's home, still trying to find him. Nobody's home, so she leaves him a note. Lucia sees her put the note in the door, and as they pass in the hallway, it's not immediately clear whether they know each other by sight. However, only moments later, Pepa is staking out the apartment and sees Lucia get into the cab, so she grabs another cab and follows her. When the cab stops, Pepa makes a note of the address and goes home. We get a funny moment where she turns on the TV and sees herself in a commercial during which she is performing as her television character. Meanwhile, Pepa's friend Candela is watching the news when she sees a story about some Arab terrorists being captured and are soon to be interrogated. All of a sudden, she just grabs a bunch of stuff and she takes it out to the garbage dump, and then she calls Pepa saying she's in trouble and they need to speak. Unfortunately, Pepa can't talk then. She's got some stalking to do. She goes to Lucia's building and watches the tenants from the outside. After a bit of time, she crosses the street and goes into a phone book, a booth directly in front of the building. She calls her answering machine, and it's a frantic call from Candela. Suddenly, the phone booth is rocked. Lucia has thrown a suitcase out the window where it landed on top of the phone booth and then broke open. The suitcase belongs to Carlos's fiancée, Marissa, and inside there's a photo of Ivan referring to Carlos as his son. Pepa arrives home and there are a bunch of messages from Candela, and out of frustration, she just rips the phone out of the wall. Yeah, once upon a time, kids. And she throws it out the window onto the balcony. Candela arrives, but before she can explain that she thinks she's being pursued by the police, Peppa runs out yet again. Moments later, Carlos arrives with Marissa. They are apartment hunting, and they have chosen Peppa's penthouse to tour. Marissa is unimpressed with the place, and what's more, she's being a little bit of a jerk about it. While looking around the apartment, Carlos sees a photo of Ivan and wonders what's up. Peppa returns, and they all figure out each other's relationship to Ivan. Carlos offers to fix the phone, and while he's working on it, Peppa tries to find out whether he knows where Ivan is, but Carlos doesn't know either. They figure there must be a third woman involved. Candela tries to kill herself by jumping off the balcony, but she changes her mind at the last moment, and they manage to pull her up. Peppa asks Carlos to get her tranquilizers from the kitchen, and Marissa follows him in. He comes out with the pills, while Candela finally explains what's going on. See, she had an affair with an Arab who later visited her with some friends, and they came to stay. Unbeknownst to her, they are a Shiite terrorist cell, and when the terrorists finally leave, Candela flees to Peppa's place. She's afraid that the police are after her. A few minutes later, Marissa gets a little bit bored with all this, and she decides to drink some gazpacho from the fridge, unaware that it's been spiked with the sleeping pills. Peppa suggests that Candela go see a lawyer, and fortunately, Carlos has a recommendation in a feminist lawyer named Paulina. Moments later, they discover an unconscious Marissa. Peppa confesses that she'd originally planned to give the spike gazpacho to Ivan, not to kill him, mind you, just to make him stay. Peppa grabs a cab to visit the lawyer on Candela's part, and coincidentally, gets the same cab driver that she had before. We come back to Peppa's apartment. Candela tells Carlos that the Shiites plan to hijack a flight to Stockholm that evening and divert it to Beirut, where they have a friend who was arrested. Carlos fixes the phone, then he calls the police, tells them what's up, hangs up before he thinks they can trace the call, and he kisses Candela. While waiting for the lawyer, Peppa gets a little nosy and discovers that the lawyer has tickets to Stockholm. The phone rings and Peppa answers it, and it's Ivan looking for Paulina. He recognizes Peppa's voice and he hangs up. During the meeting, Paulina behaves rather oddly and says she thinks that Candela doesn't have much recourse but to turn herself in. Peppa returns to the apartment and suggests that she and Candela take a vacation out of the country, essentially lying about what Paulina told her. Lucia calls and says that she's coming over to confront her about Ivan. Carlos says that Lucia has recently been released from a mental hospital. Peppa decides she's tired of Ivan, so she grabs a suitcase and she goes to throw it out. Ivan shows up to retrieve his suitcase, but he barely misses seeing Peppa leave with it. He calls Peppa from a phone booth and leaves her a message, and as she tosses the bag into the back of a truck, we see that Paulina is stalking the apartment building, hoping to get something on Candela. Peppa returns to her apartment and hears Carlos playing Lola Beltran's Soy Infeliz. She throws the record out the window, and it hits Paulina in the back of the head. Peppa hears Ivan's message, rips out the phone a second time, and throws the answering machine out the window. This time, the machine lands square on the hood of Paulina's car, with her and Ivan inside. Lucia arrives, accompanied by the police, who traced Carlos's call. Candela panics, but Peppa begins telling the police about the relationships between everyone, which sounds sketchy, but they're going with it for the time being. She offers everybody something to drink, and Carlos suggests giving them some gazpacho. The telephone repairman arrives to fix the damage that was done the first time around, so Peppa's story about the phone being damaged earlier holds up. Eventually, as she tells the story, Peppa tweaks to the fact that Ivan is going to Stockholm with Paulina. Soon, the policeman and the repairman are knocked out. Carlos and Candela fall asleep on the sofa. Lucia grabs the policeman's guns and aims them at Peppa and says she faked being sane when she heard Ivan's voice being dubbed into a foreign film, and that's how she got out of the mental hospital. She throws the gazpacho in Peppa's face, and she rushes to the airport to kill Ivan by hijacking a motorcycle. Peppa chases her in a cab with her neighbor Anna, and I give you one guess as to who the cab driver is. Now, Anna's riding in the cab because it's her boyfriend who owns the motorcycle that got hijacked, so she's basically following her boyfriend. A chase ensues with Lucia actually shooting at the cab a couple of times. The cab driver wants to bail out of the chase by then, but Peppa convinces him to at least get them to the airport, even if a chase isn't specifically involved. At the airport, Lucia sees Ivan and Paulina at the security checkpoint, and she pulls out the gun and points it at them. Peppa thwarts the murder attempt by rolling a luggage cart at Lucia, and then she faints again. Lucia is knocked to the floor and the gun goes off. Ivan rushes to Peppa's aid, and when she comes to, he apologizes for the way he's been treating her and offers to talk things out with her. Peppa, however, declares Nope, too late now, and leaves. She says the only reason she came to the airport in the first place was to prevent Lucia from killing her. Him, rather. Peppa returns to her home, which of course is a mess and everybody's still unconscious. Peppa just sits on the balcony and Marissa is just waking up. The women chat briefly and Peppa reveals that she's pregnant. That's the reason she needed to talk to Ivan. Marissa goes into the apartment and she's pretty horrified by what she sees. Peppa pulls her back to the balcony and says she'll explain later. And as they speak with each other amiably, the credits roll and we hear Soy Infeliz again.
Okay, so let's talk about Pedro Almodovar. He is unarguably the most famous director from Spain working today. If you want to talk about all time, once upon a time, the answer might have been Buñuel, but I think Almodovar has passed him in recognition value as well. Now, it must be understood about Almodovar, at least what he said in interviews anyway about his career, is that all of it has been in reaction to living for several years under the reign of General Francisco Franco, who was the dictator of Spain for around 40 years. And that part made up about 25 years or so of Almodovar's life. But of course, that is the formative years, your first 25 years. So obviously, that left a giant mark on him, and he basically wanted to do, at least in his early movies, show everything that Franco's repressive government, which was a right-wing dictatorship, would not allow. And if you've watched any of Almodovar's early movies, you would find that that was quite a bit. I don't know, Claude, if you've had a chance to read yet Quentin Tarantino's collection of film criticism, Cinema Speculation. Well, one of the things that he talks about in the book is that he considers the 80s to be the worst time in movie history, particularly in the U.S., because he thinks that a lot of directors around did not have any guts. That's the shortened version. And Almodovar was one of the few directors who emerged from that time whom he did admire, because he thought that Almodovar wasn't afraid of holding anything back. And that was something that he could totally get behind. Now, Almodovar's movies, at least up to this point, Woman on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown was his breakout movie worldwide. All of his movies up to this time were very outrageous comedies. And that would continue with the couple movies that he made immediately after this. Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down, which attempts to take, I guess the short version you could say is attempts to take the story of The Collector, a novel written by John Fowles, later filmed by William Wyler, and turn it into a comic slash fairy tale, and doesn't quite work. And then also Kika, which I like more than a lot of people, but definitely is not for everyone. After that, Almodovar did tone down his more outrageous impulses somewhat. You know, he made movies that would not seem so far disconnected from the Russes. Movies like The Flower of My Secret or All About My Mother, or even something a little more outrageous, Volver. You know, those were woman-centered movies, but also could live quite well in tune with familiar, quote-unquote, women's pictures. Not that he completely gave up his outrageous tendencies. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite Almodovar movies of all time, The Skin I Live In, which is a movie I don't want to spoil because a lot of people haven't seen it, but let's just say it is the ultimate mad scientist movie. And that's saying quite a bit. But anyway, Woman on the Verge represents probably his ultimate of his over-the-top comic movies. Let me shove in every impulse that was that I wasn't allowed to express in my youth and put it in this movie type of movie. And I think it's his best movie overall, even though he has made a couple of movies since that I really like The Skin I Live In and the last movie that he did, Parallel Mothers. But ultimately, this not only is the first one that I saw of his, it's also my favorite. Were you caught up in it too, Claude?
This film was a ton of fun to watch. I mean, it relies pretty heavily on weird coincidences and you know, kind of, you know, stretching belief just a little bit. But I think he really put it together in a really great way. And so that the reveals came at the right time, and that basically, I don't think there was ever much time in this film where you were a whole lot of time ahead of the characters in the film. Like, you were discovering stuff along with them, and that just added to the whole fun of it. And then, yeah, there were a whole bunch of weird little touches that got thrown in that I didn't really discuss, as far as like the fact that she's keeping the chickens and the ducks and the rabbits on the balcony there, and like all the weird little details of the taxi cab. And, you know, funny for a film like that took place in 1988, and you're looking around the cab and you're seeing like the magazines for rental along one side, and you can buy cigarettes and tissues and, you know, all sorts of things like that. And it's kind of funny because, at least in the copy that I saw, and I was watching a Criterion disc, there was one shot that you saw of the cab where there was a tray of cigarettes and a sign that read, "Thank you for smoking." And you couldn't read the entire sign, but the captions were happy enough to tell me that that's what the sign read. I was like, that's cool. But basically, he had all this weird junk going on, and he could offer any kind of music that you liked. You know, he was especially fond of mambo, and, you know, Peppa was willing to go along with that. She loves mambo. And it had me thinking, like, this is kind of what Uber drivers have to do nowadays, is like they have to do so much entertaining of the passengers in order to get that high rating. And like, this guy was just doing it because he thought it was, you know, kind of fun. And yeah, he could make a little bit of extra money renting out the magazines and whatever else. But he just like, this is how I'm going to run my cab, and this is how it's going to be. And we should note that he does recognize her as an actress from a TV show. And that's how we know that she's playing her character in the TV commercial, because they talk about that a little bit. He asked for an autograph for, what was it, his girlfriend, I think. And
yes.
And so they actually build up this little bit of a relationship during that initial cab chase, so that when you see him again, he's got a very distinctive hairstyle besides that, that you're like, okay, this is going to be cool. He comes up again, and then he turns up the third time, and like, all right, this is going to get good. You actually gear yourself up for like, fun cab ride coming, here we go. So yes, I like this film a lot.
Right. Now, we should mention, because I have to admit, under the mistaken impression that Almodovar himself was playing the cab driver, and so apparently were some other people.
I was going to say, in IMDb, it says like a lot of people were faked out by that.
Yeah. Guillermo Montesinos is the actor who plays the cab driver, and he's very wonderful. Now,
maybe it's because of the haircut.
Possibly. And that's one of the parts of this movie that I'm going to talk about as adding to the tone of the movie. But first, one of the odd things about this movie, even though Almodovar has said that one of his inspirations was Hollywood screwball comedies of the 1930s and 1940s.
I see that, yeah.
And having rewatched several of my favorites in preparation for this episode, I can definitely see that. But for a comedy, there aren't a lot of moments in the movie that you can point to obvious gags or jokes, you know, that would be funny outside of the context of this movie. The thank you for smoking sign is one. And the only other one that I can point to is that commercial. And I really hate explaining jokes, but this one is just so funny that it's worth mentioning. It's a commercial for a laundry detergent. And the character that she plays is the mother of a serial killer.
Right.
And he brings his clothes home and she washes them. And the police come by to inspect them. And they basically give the
bloodstains are gone, baby.
The commercial bloodstains are gone. They're spotless. And then she holds them up to the camera saying, see how good this detergent is, or words to that effect. And it's really funny. But the rest of it, the rest of the movie is, you know, it's something that you could easily make a thriller out of, or even a dark drama. The reason why it's a comedy, apart from the tone, which I'm going to get to in a moment, is the fact that it's constructed like a screwball comedy or a farce. And, you know, just the way the coincidences pile up and are thrown together. And I think there's one thing that you didn't really mention outright, so I'll mention that Paulina is Ivan's latest girlfriend, and that's part of the reason why she's so impatient with Peppa and doesn't really want to talk to her. It's because she knows that Peppa was the one who came before her. And so, you know, this follows the tradition of screwball comedies in the way that it's constructed, and also traditional farce. But what this reminds me of, in a weird way, is A Midsummer Night's Dream. Because like that play, there aren't really a lot of obvious jokes in it. I mean, obviously when Bottom gets turned into a donkey, that's funny. But it's not like Shakespeare's other comedies. And I'm thinking of things like Love's Labour's Lost, or Much Ado About Nothing, or Twelfth Night, where there are obvious jokes in them that you could say, oh yeah, this is why we're supposed to find this funny. For that play and for Woman on the Verge, there aren't that many signposts saying, hey, this is a comedy, except for the construction. And as I said, which I'm going to get to in a moment, the way the tone is handled. But nonetheless, it is very funny.
Yeah, it's kind of like farce with a sardonic edge to it. It's just interesting the way it's laid out. And you're right, yeah, very few, like, you know, jokes that don't emerge from the situation rather than, you know, somebody just like rattling off one-liners.
Right. Now, one of the ways that it's funny is the tone of the movie. And part of the tone is achieved in the look. Now, you mentioned Johnny the Guitar. I'm afraid I don't hold that movie in the same self-esteem as you do.
It's 94% fresh on the Rotten Tomato meter there, you know.
Yeah, well, anyway,
let me say this though. I think it's kind of important that that's the film, if only because what you have is you know, basically it centers on a woman character played by Crawford. Okay. And she is basically being suspected of committing crimes. Okay. And that she is going to be, you know, chased down by a lynch mob and that kind of thing because she helped someone out. It's really a little bit parallel to this. It's like, you know, somebody helps somebody else out and it turns into trouble. And, you know, there is a parallel there. And I think that's really why I thought it was worth mentioning. But it's all got a pretty good cast besides.
And the only member of the cast that I really like is Sterling Hayden, I should also add.
Yeah, and if you want to see the cop that got, you know, beat up Michael Corleone there when he was a baby guy there, go check that film. And also McCambridge.
General Ripper.
Yes, General Ripper from Dr.
Strangelove.
Dr. Strangelove. I am blanking all of a sudden. Mercedes McCambridge, who provided the voice of the demon in The Exorcist, and she did a lot of radio.
Another movie I'm not a fan of, and another actor I'm not a fan of.
Really? Okay.
And I'm also
Ward
not
Bond?
A fan
Come
of
on.
Okay, Ward Bond, I'll give you that one. But anyway.
And Ernest Borgnine, who is a much more subtle actor than most people give him credit for being.
I didn't remember that he was in Johnny Guitar, and yes I do like him, although I don't always agree about the subtle part, but that's a different argument.
Not
but
always,
anyway,
but.
But anyway, this Johnny Guitar is one of Almodovar's favorite films. As a matter of fact, he said that at one point he knew the entire movie by heart, and that is the main reason that he picked the movie for both Peppa and Ivan. Picked that movie as the movie that Peppa and Ivan were dubbing. But it's suitable because a lot of Almodovar's inspiration for his movies in general, and even movies like All About My Mother and Flower of My Secret, which are not quite, or his most recent one, Parallel Mothers, which are not as antic, I guess, for lack of a better term, or as heightened as Woman on the Verge is, are all rooted in Hollywood melodramas of the 1950s. And certainly Nicholas Ray was a leading director in that type of movie. But also because a lot of the movies in Hollywood during that time, at least the color movies, were very brightly lit. Some of those movies, I would say, to their detriment, but certainly not in this movie. You know, Peppa, for example, is always wearing red, which shows the fierceness of her character. And by the way, we should mention that Jose Maria DiCasio was the costume designer for this movie, but also the walls are all primary colors, and the set decoration was by Felix Murcia, and just the colors of the cinematography are all bright, and the cinematographer was Jose Luis Alcaine. Everything is almost like a pop art movie because of how brightly colored it is. And as I mentioned, that is from 1950s Hollywood color movies and also into the 60s until directors started taking their influence from European movies of the 50s and 60s and made their color movies much more subtle. For the record, Nerouse's very few color movies, or at least the very few color movies of his that I've seen, are more in tune with the European color movies of that time, more subtle colors, whereas Almodovar goes for big, bright colors. And that all adds to the comic tone. You know, it wouldn't work as well as much as a comedy if everything were not so brightly lit. And that's not just to what people are wearing and the makeup everyone has on, But I think even the phone booth is red, if I'm not mistaken. The phone booth that the suitcase falls on top of.
I think so. It's certainly colorful. I mean, like, it had like signage on it and stuff. So yeah, it was definitely meant to be seen. And the suitcase itself was like bright pink. So yeah, and I think that just, as you say, it adds to it and makes it more of a comic book almost. Like the you get the same kind of thing, like watching the old 1966 Batman series where everything was very, very brightly colored. But I mean, their other nod to comic books was also like tilting the camera so frequently. But it was the same kind of thing, is like you are meant to go in a little bit lighthearted.
Right. Now, along with screwball comedies of the 30s and 40s and melodramas of the 50s, which in Almodovar's early movies were given a comic twist, especially here, there are a couple of other inspirations for this movie that we should talk about. The idea of a woman waiting by the phone for her lover to call. And by the way, the one plot development that I did kind of sort of figure out was happening before we found out what it was what was happening was the fact that Pepper was pregnant.
Hmm.
You know, I did sort of figure that out, even though I saw this movie when I was in my mid-20s or something like that. You know, I did kind of get that feeling. That's why she's acting like this. But that whole idea of a woman waiting for her lover to call, Almodovar lifted that from a Jean Cocteau play called The Human Voice, which incidentally, although it's not available yet, unfortunately, he made into a short film just recently with Tilda Swinton, finally his first English language movie. He had been toying with that idea of making an English language movie for a very long time, but somehow it never came to pass until this one. And then there is a sequence that is not really a joke per se, but it is kind of funny, and it's taken from a comedy. It's the scene where Ivan, who, by the way, is played by Fernando Guillén, is walking down a hallway. And if memory serves, this is the only portion in the movie that's not in bright colors. It's shot in black and white. He's walking down a hallway, and he's saying sweet nothings to all the women who he's with him. And, you know, basically, you know, trying to come on to them without committing himself to them. And all of that, I believe, is inspired by a scene from Eric Rohmer's film called Love in the Afternoon. Although, to avoid confusion with the Billy Wilder movie, the same name, it was renamed Chloe in the Afternoon in this country, where the hero, or the main character, I should say, is not a hero, imagines himself walking down the street, and a number of women would agree to go to bed with him if he just asked. And by the way, it's not the same type of joke in Almodovar's movie as it is in the Rohmer movie. In the Rohmer movie, there's sort of an in-joke. And that movie was the last movie in his six moral tales. And the woman that the main character comes onto are all played by actresses from the previous five films. You don't have that same type of recognition here, as far as I know. But it does amount to the same type of heightened humor. And although, as I said, it's not really a joke, it is funny the way that Almodovar sets that up. And also the way the actors all play it.
Right, and we get a callback to it a little bit, I think, later on when they are speaking on the phone together, Ivan and Pepe, and he says something like, how many men have you had to forget? And she's like, as many as the women as you remember. So I think it's like the similar kind of mentality there going on.
Right. Now, let's talk about the cast here. Now, like Naruse and like some other directors that we've mentioned on the show before, Almodovar did have a stock company of actors. Carmen Mora, who's the actress who played Peppa, she had appeared in quite a few movies of Almodovar's before this, including What Have I Done to Deserve This and Matador. Matador, by the way, also featured in his first major role for Almodovar, Antonio Banderas, who plays Carlos in this movie.
Yeah, and you think, and like, he's a baby in this film or so. He looks very, very young. And I thought, like, was this his film debut? He was in his late 20s at that point. He was a veteran by then.
I think he'd only been in a few movies with Almodovar before this one.
Oh, I mean, just in general,
Right. He did go on to appear in their most notorious movie together, again, Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down. And what Banderas and Mora both have in common is both of them had a falling out with Almodovar for undisclosed reasons. Mora after this movie, Banderas after Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down, although both of them have since reconciled with Almodovar and went on to work with him again. Banderas is in that other movie of his that I mentioned that I like almost as much as Woman on the Verge, The Skin I Live In. Julieta Serrano, who appears in Parallel Mothers, plays Lucia, and she's been in a lot of movies. Rossi De Palma, who is also in Parallel Mothers and has appeared with Almodovar a few times, she plays Marissa, Carlos's girlfriend. And Kitty Manver, who has appeared in a few of Almodovar's movies, she plays Paulina, about the only actress in here who I don't know if specifically if she was, oh no, I'm sorry, she was, she did appear with for Almodovar a few times, Maria Barranco. She plays Candela, and she went on to appear in Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down. Now, Victoria Abril, who would star for Almodovar in High Heels and Kika, she almost was going to play Candela, but I think Barranco does a good job in the role, and I think all the actors in the movie are very good, but particularly Mora, because she is the focus of the movie. She's the main character. She's the one who kind of has to keep everything together in the movie, even when she herself is going crazy. And yet, although Mora does play big, like all the other members of the cast, she does make the character work for the movie.
Yeah, she does, and she makes her believable. You know, sometimes these other characters, they play a little bit big, and you're like, I'm not necessarily buying that anybody would behave this way, like, as consistently as that. Although, I mean, you've got Lucia, who, you know, recently got out of the mental hospital. So, okay, there's at least a reason for her to behave the way she has been. And Carlos actually explains that she recently got out and she was all angry at Ivan. And so, and that's why she really doesn't like Carlos. And so you're kind of buying into her behavior. But I wasn't quite the same way about Marissa. I was like, I get she's a little bit snooty, but like, she's a real jerk here. And I was kind of glad she was unconscious for a nice chunk of the movie. But I also wanted to bring to mind, there's that one scene where Lucia and Peppa speak on the phone to one another. And this scene struck me kind of interesting because we kept intercutting back and forth between the two characters as they said their thing. And in both cases, the actress is staring directly into the camera. So there's a little bit of talking to you going on here. And there are other times when, like, say, Peppa is looking in general toward the camera, and the one that comes quickly to mind would be the scene where she's dubbing lines right before she faints. And so she is there. There's kind of a point of view shot from the screen that she's looking at. So she's looking kind of toward the camera, but you can also see she's looking up a little bit above it. But in that one scene with the phone call, and it's very confrontational, and I must come see you, and we've got to talk about this thing, da 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 da. And both of them just looking dead into the lens. And it really struck me that scene. It was kind of powerful and not at all funny there.
Yeah. And at the same time, you know, it's not like they're breaking the fourth wall or anything like that. It's just they happen to be looking into the camera. You know, Almodovar is not someone, although he takes influence from people, I think, who have broken the fourth wall, Godard, for one. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really indulge in that. So because it wouldn't really work in his movies, or at least the ones that I've seen, where it does work in at least the best of Godard's. Now,
right, and the closest we get, like in Woman Ascending the Stair, is you know, Keiko is narrating, and that's as close as you get to breaking the fourth wall there. Whereas, you know, Peppa, you know, she's kind of sort of narrating, but at the same time, it's really just she's talking to herself. And kind of explaining, like, right, why there are chickens and ducks on the balcony and that sort of thing.
Right.
So again, she's just talking aloud and not necessarily, and so she's providing the exposition to you, but she is not necessarily talking to you.
Right. Now, getting back to the screwball comedy influence, one thing I forgot to mention, the one twist that Almodovar puts on that idea is that almost all, if not all, of those screwball comedies separate the couple at some point for plot reasons and then bring them back together, mm-hmm, at the end. And the way that Almodovar plays with that in this movie, of course, is that Peppa and Ivan do not get back together at the end, that Peppa realizes that she's better off without Ivan. And at the end of the movie, she finally acts in a more mature way, mm-hmm, for lack of a better word, about it than she had been throughout the movie, although possibly for understandable reasons up to that point why she was acting so crazily.
And I think now, with the exception of the near miss at the building, that's the only time we see them together, correct?
Right. Now, a couple of trivia points I want to mention here. Mm. Almodovar's brother, Augustine, who is also the executive producer, appears briefly as the architect that Peppa, I think it's Peppa, who is talking to at one point. And his mother, who was alive at the time, appears as the newscaster who's making the announcement about the wanted terrorists. And in addition to the fact that Almodovar had been toying with the idea of making a movie in English, which he never did until he did that short film of The Human Voice, there had been talk in Hollywood for years about making an American remake of this movie. Madonna wanted to do it at some point. Richard Benjamin, who we discussed when we talked about Catch-22, being an actor, but who also had a directing career in the 80s and 90s. He was possibly going to direct it at some point, and it would possibly star his wife, Paula Prentice. But none of those proposed remakes came to fruition. However, there was a Broadway musical made of the movie that happened in 2010. I have not seen it, so I don't know how it was compared to the movie. But personally speaking, I think this is one non-English language movie that wouldn't work quite as well in an American remake. How about you, Claude?
Yeah, probably not. And the other issue that you get at this point is that there are several, you'd have to make it a period piece, basically, because there are several elements of this particular film which are really dependent upon technology that has changed to the point where it's pointless to do that story now. You know, like people have cell phones now. They don't have answering machines. And you know, and to pull the phone out of the wall, just yeah, that ain't happening. And so, yeah, you would have to set this film in the 70s or 80s and in order to make it work. And I frankly don't necessarily think that it would get as good a reception. I think because, as we said way back at the beginning of the segment, is that it's not a jokey film. It's a very funny film, but it's not a jokey joke film. And unfortunately, right, you know, sometimes audiences need to have that kind of fed to them.
Right. Well, especially American audiences. But anyway,
I didn't want to use the A word, but yes.
Okay. Do you have anything else you want to add to this before we wrap this up?
No, just, you know, don't let, you know, Sean's gatekeeping divert you from going to see Johnny Guitar. That's it.
Okay. Well, as I said, not a fan
different
of
strokes,
three
different
of the
folks,
major people.
It's all
yes.
good, you know.
Yes. Okay. So this is the part of the podcast episode when we mention that both of these movies are available on DVD, on Criterion Edition DVD, and I happen to own the Criterion Edition of both of them. Although Woman on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown also is available on the regular DVD. But if you prefer to watch them both streaming or online, When a Woman Ascends the Stairs is available to watch exclusively if you subscribe to the Criterion channel, whereas Woman on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, you can stream for free on Freevee if you're willing to put up with the ads, and you can rent or buy it on Amazon, Apple TV, DirecTV, or AMC On Demand, though whether or not any of those are available in the original Spanish language, I do not know. But anyway, if you want to find out, that's where you can find them online. And coming up in our next episode, we mentioned that a major theme of When a Woman Ascends the Stairs is the characters having struggles with money or the lack of it. The two movies we'll be talking about in our next movie take that struggle and that idea up to 11, as it were. And those movies are from Japan, again, from 2018, Shoplifters. And that is written and directed by Hirokazu Koreeda. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And then from South Korea, from 2019, Parasite, directed and co-written by Bong Joon-ho. And both of these movies are available, again, on DVD. Parasite is available on a 3-disc Criterion Edition, as well as a regular DVD. But if you prefer to stream them, Shoplifters, you can stream. If you subscribe to Hoopla, you can watch for free on Plex, as well as Pluto TV or Vudu if you're willing to put up with the ads, or you can rent or buy them through Amazon, Apple Play, and many other streaming services. Whereas Parasite, you can stream for free if you subscribe to Hulu, or if you're lucky enough to get Canopy through your local library, or you can rent or buy it through Alamo Drafthouse online, Amazon, Apple TV, and most other streaming services. And we have our own website, wordsandmovies.com. True. If you have a comment, you can leave it on any of our posts, or you can email us through wordsandmoviespod@gmail.com. And we also have our own Facebook page, facebook.com/wordsandmovies. And you can find me, Sean Gallagher, on Facebook as well.
And you can find me on the Book of Face under my own name, Claude Call. And you can check out my other podcast, How Good It Is, at howgooditis.com.
Which also has its own Facebook page and its own website.
Yes, it does.
So thank you for listening, and we'll see you all next time.
Yes, we will. And let me tell you that this show was produced by Sean Gallagher and Claude Call, with editing and post-production by Claude, with some help from Ophonic.com. Audio clips are used under fair use rules for commentary and educational framing. Everything else is copyrighted by Claude Call and Sean Gallagher. The theme music that you're bopping along to right now is by Solar Flare and is used under a Creative Commons license. Podcast hosting is provided by Spotify for Podcasters. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.